You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A Plus, it's the Friday News Roundup. Joe Biden signs a climate and health care bill. Liz Cheney loses big in Wyoming. And Rudy Giuliani appears before a Georgia grand jury. Latest on those stories and more today at 6 on 1A Plus. Now, economists are warning of a potential retirement crisis looming in the U.S. Many Americans don't have employer-sponsored retirement plans and find themselves short on savings. And that was happening even before the pandemic. Add in 2 years of pandemic disruption, plus inflation, fears of a recession. It all leads to big concerns about a big group of baby boomers on their way into retirement. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How are your retirement savings, your retirement plans looking? Are you worried about having enough for retirement for you or maybe for a parent? If you're already retired, how did the process go for you? If you're younger, have you found ways to start saving yet? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Teresa Ghilarducci is a nationally recognized expert on labor and retirement security. She's an economics professor at the New School in New York. Her books include How to Retire with Enough Money and How to Know What Enough Is, and Rescuing Retirement, a Plan to Guarantee Retirement Security for All Americans. Teresa, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, I'm so glad. This is really an important topic.
It's a topic you've been following for years. Can you set the stage, the problems we had before we even got to the pandemic? What were things looking like?
Yeah, so before we got to the pandemic, we had 40 years of people hoping that the do-it-yourself system would work. We had 40 years where people were either depending upon their 401k, taking a little money out of their 401k, not having a 401k. And we watched the Social Security system kind of cut back benefits because they were raising the retirement age. You could get full benefits. So we were crossing our fingers and doing lots of forecasting about what a fully mature, what I call the do-it-yourself or the 401k modeled kind of retirement plan would look like. And so was the rest of the world, because the United States really went far on the limb to say, hey, in the 70s, we're going to cut back on Social Security, we're going to cut back on these defined benefit plans, and we're going to introduce, it's really started in the beginning of the 80s, these voluntary plans where your employer can provide them or not provide it. You can join it or not join it. And then we'll give you tax breaks for it, you know, if you're in the higher brackets. So we've now had 40 years to look at that. And before the pandemic, stock market was doing pretty well. And older workers who had a college education were keeping their jobs. So I was really concerned about what I call the tale of two retirements, that one group might be sailed into retirement, keep their standard of living by working a few more years, but others were not able to keep their jobs. They were being pushed out, and their retirement savings and Social Security was not going to be enough to keep their living standards. So we were already forecasting middle class, so I'll do this real slow and I'll stop talking, that 40% of middle class older workers, you know, on the verge of retirement, would be what we call downwardly mobile when they retire, that they would have to downsize, they may even have to live in poverty. And then the pandemic came.
Yeah. And then obviously the pandemic did a lot of things to the economy as it affects retirement planning, especially for this generation coming into retirement. What were some of the biggest impacts?
Yeah, so a lot of people looked at a lot of aspects of the pandemic. Since I'm obsessed, you know, with retirement and older workers, I just had my eyes on the 38 million workers who were over 52 but yet not had retired, and I watched to see what happened in April, in May. Remember those dark days of 2020, and we saw a big upsurge in what we call excess retirements. You know, that we knew that about a million people every 9 months or so would retire. They'd be pushed out or they would voluntarily leave. But we had a pretty good sense of what the normal trend was. And we saw a huge uptick in people saying that they were retired. And we then probed to see whether or not it was voluntary or involuntary, because you can kind of tell if it's voluntary if you just ask a few more questions. And we found that which is like, did you retire before your boss laid you off? You know, those mm-hmm. kinds of obvious questions. Did you retire because you felt you had enough money? And we were finding the vast majority of people who told government surveyors that they were retired were really unemployed. So we saw what we might call in the press retirement. What I saw was just extra unemployment. And people with the least education, with just high school degrees, were much more likely, twice as much more likely to be involuntary retired.
What led, I mean, part of that might be service sector jobs that took an early hit from the yes. pandemic. I also, what yes. you know, there's got to be some people who are worried, do I want to go back if I'm in an at-risk yeah. group to this job? Yeah. Is that part of the involuntary-ish retirement story? But,
you're right. You asked like the best questions because we spent 8 months really investigating whether or not it was kind of a supply problem or a demand problem. Was the fear of the virus and the way it affected older people, not younger people, really driving this excess trend? And we concluded it was absolutely not. That if people could get a hazmat suit and go back to work, they would, because they really needed the money. What we saw instead were concerns of employers that they would have expensive older workers on their hands. Remember, this was the end of the Trump administration when a lot of labor law regulations were not being enforced. So it was this kind of golden moment where employers could push out older workers without a fear of a age discrimination suit. Older workers are often more expensive. And because this was a medical emergency, employers were really afraid of the extra cost of the medical care.
Okay, so for this group, as you mentioned, often lower education, yeah. maybe lower paid jobs, yeah. I'm guessing lower retirement yeah. savings, therefore leaving the workforce earlier. Well, that sounds like a recipe for really bad. What are you seeing?
Yeah, it was really bad. You know, and it was, you know, and it was because it was kind of a once in a lifetime chance these employers could push out their older workers. So what does it mean? Let me count the ways. Let's talk about finances. It means that if they have any savings, they'll draw down on their savings faster than they'll cut their consumption, because it's really hard to downsize. It's kind of expensive to downsize. So they'll draw down on their savings they were planning to spend, you know, in their 60s, they're now spending in their late 50s. It also means that they're planning on taking their Social Security earlier, you know, at 62 when you get the lowest amount, rather than kind of waiting till 64, 65, and if you can, you know, up until 70. So they're taking a lower Social Security, lifetime Social Security benefit. They're drawing down on their savings. They may be going into debt, though we didn't see big increases in debt, but they also may not go to the doctor. And that means when they hit Medicare age, you know, they're going to come into that program much sicker than they would have been if they had maintained their health insurance. So a lot of the pain of this early retirement will be felt a little bit later. I think the immediate effects have been shame and isolation.
Talking to Teresa Ghilarducci, economist, expert on retirement, looking at looming retirement problems, already existing retirement problems when it comes to savings for a lot of people. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, with your experiences. Let's bring on a caller now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hello.
Hi, good afternoon from northern Wisconsin. It's a beautiful day up here. I'm 62. I'm 62. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the topic because I have a plan. When I graduated from college, I had a speaker tell me, you know, you might just plan on different careers in your lifetime, that your life might be more fun changing from one industry to the next. So that's kind of what I did. And I have a Teamster pension in my back pocket. So when I retire, I'm going to get that pension at 65. So I'm planning to work till I'm 65 before I collect Social Security. And I feel pretty confident about my income at that time. But when I look back on my life, I think it's been pretty fun.
Jeff, glad you had fun along the way. Jeff. But Teresa, I think there's a lot of people out there, maybe the younger more so, saying, what's a pension?
Yeah, I know. I was just going to say congratulations, Jeff. And I, what a good personality you have. Like what, and what a good head you have for finance. What I heard was that you made sure that you had a pension. You know, your and a union pension is often some of the better pensions because you have a whole union behind you always trying to make it better. Now, the are you in the central states? Because that's had some problems. But if you're not in the central states, it's probably a pretty good union plan, and it's insured by the federal government. So congratulations. You're 62. You have 3 more years. You sound like you don't have any health problems and that you might be in a job that you enjoy. And I suspect that you'll make it to 65 and you'll be fine. You will have to scrutinize your Medicare Advantage kinds of plans. Make sure you do that well. And keep up your health. What I always like to tell people in situations like you, where you don't have to do really that much more, but to make yourself better, pretend you're a diabetic right now and just eat like a diabetic would. Low sugar, you know, do your exercises. Because if you can stave off that disease, 50% of people, you know, in the 60s have it, you can save a lot of money. It's a lot more fun, but you can also save a lot of money because diabetes is expensive. So I don't have much to, I don't have much advice for you. I just have a lot of congratulations.
Thanks for calling in, Jeff. We're talking to economics professor Teresa Ghilarducci from the New School in New York, author of books about retirement, looking at retirement crisis. A lot of people with little or no savings as they near retirement. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you have an experience to share, if you have a question for our guest about dealing with retirement, if you have thoughts on bigger picture solutions for these problems, 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Teresa Ghilarducci, economics professor at the New School in New York, expert on retirement, with us today looking at the causes of, potential solutions for, an impending retirement crisis in the U.S. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, experiences, questions. That's 800-642-1234. Teresa, before we go back to our callers, and I know you've written about kind of what individual people can do to prepare for retirement. Yeah. You've also looked at big picture systemic solutions. Do you want to hit us with some of the main ones you'd like to see?
Yeah. No, I think this is the time, and we have a Congress that kind of works for once, and so maybe there are ears to hear, especially in your Wisconsin senators. This is a time we should really consider lowering the Medicare age. Remember those people that lost their jobs, also lost their health care. Obamacare is pretty expensive for older workers. They're going to be sicker by the time they get to Medicare. Studies have shown that if we lower that Medicare age, you know, to 60 or even 50, you do two things. One, you make sure that people are as healthy as they can be as they get older. It actually saves money. But you also help employers get excited about hiring an older worker because if Medicare is first payer, the health insurance for an older worker is not as expensive as it is now. Right now, a kind employer, you know, one that's not bigoted, has to think twice about hiring an older worker because the health insurance costs are so high. So we should really lower the Medicare age and make it first payer. The other thing to do is to really fix our pension system. If anyone has been following me for my whole life, I have been incredulous about why we don't have a pension system that everybody has on top of the Social Security system that everybody has. You know, Social Security is great. It's insurance. You pay for it by premiums. The younger people pay for the older people. But we also have a system that only some people have where they save. That money gets invested into the economy. And by the time that person retires, they can draw down on those investments. And when that works, like Jeff with his Teamster pension, it works. But if people don't have those savings accounts, we can't have that virtuous circle of helping the economy and helping somebody. So I've been advocating, and I think we might be close in the next year or so, to have everybody at work have two kinds of pensions, the Social Security and a defined contribution plan that has what we call characteristics of that old pension system, because you can take it out only when you retire and it lasts for the rest of your life. you know, this isn't that hard. It really isn't that hard. We also need, I've been working with a lot of people these last 2 years because the pandemic has laid bare how awful our unemployment insurance system is for older workers. Older workers take twice as long to find a job if they've been laid off. And so those unemployment insurance benefits should last twice as long for somebody over 40 or 50. And our training programs are really oriented towards younger workers. We have a lot of people like Jeff who have a lot of wisdom and experience, but their industry kind of, fell apart, you know, beneath them. You learned that in Wisconsin. I lived in Indiana for a long time. These are really skilled industrial workers that don't have an industry anymore. And so to retrain them for other jobs that require the same kind of judgment and dexterity is vital, but we do not have a system like that in this country. So there's a range of policies that make work for older people good and make pensions for the people who need to retire and want to retire better. And we just have not paid attention to those needs because it's a slow-moving crisis.
Let's go back to our callers now. Jason is with us in Elkhorn. Jason, hi.
Yes, good afternoon from cloudy southern Wisconsin.
Okay.
What's your question, Jason?
So my question is, my first employer did not offer a 401k until I had been there for probably 10 or 12 years. Wow. So I feel like I'm trying to make up for lost time. So yeah. My question is, I've lived pretty tight, kept the original house that we bought and did not buy a new home every time we got a raise. And instead, we took our raises and put them into our 401k. So I'm to the point now that I'm saving roughly $25,000 a year into my 401k. Is this the right thing to do? Or should I be doing something different with my money?
Jason, how old are you?
I am 47.
And how old is your wife, if you have one?
She is also 47.
And she has the same strategy? She has a pension.
No, that's actually great. She has a pension.
Okay.
So I'm trying to make up for what I didn't save.
Gotcha, Jason.
Well, it sounds like I'm going to put you on the cover of my next book, that you are doing exactly the right thing. Not only because you are paying attention to your lifestyle and you're satisfying, you're not maximizing, you know, all your spending, you're satisfied with what you have. You also realize that you lost a lot in those first 10 years in your 30s, which is we should go arm in arm and say to 30-year-olds, hey, you know, we don't give you very much, but you do have time. So you did lose a lot of buildup in those 10 years. So you're making up for it. You're also putting your money in a tax sheltered plan as well as your wife, even though it's kind of set up for her, because you get a lot of savings by that money not being taxed going in, and it's not taxed while it's building up. I spent last week with a very smart PhD historian who teaches at a prestige university, convincing him to save in his 401k because he was leaving so much money on the table, and you're not doing that. The only place you probably could improve is to be very diligent about where your 401k money is being invested. And I would suggest that it be invested in indexed funds because you can save money on fees. Do you want to tell me a little bit about your portfolio?
We don't have too much time left, actually, and I want to get one more caller in. Jason, thanks for calling. I hope that helps. Jim is with us now in Cedarburg. Jim, hi.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, thanks, Bob. Great show again. Hello. Can you speak to the cap on Social Security and why the politicians are just I don't know what you want to say, recalcitrant? They just won't raise the cap. Thank you.
You know what? Yes. So what Jim is talking about is that people who make $13 million a year, big executives, Bill Gates, you know, makes $50 million a year, are treated by the Social Security system as if they make about $140,000 per year. And they pay their taxes for Social Security, the first day of New Year's Eve. If we raise the cap And those $50 million executives paid their Social Security tax on $50 million, just like they pay on their Medicare. We would not have any kind of financial crisis in Social Security, and we could even expand benefits. I think, Jim, that we have a coalition in Congress among Democrats, and if they keep the majority, that we will see that cap raised and more money come into Social Security to secure Social Security. So I'm more optimistic about this than I've been in 35 years.
Thanks for the call, Jim. And just our last minute or so, Teresa, for somebody who's approaching retirement and is feeling a sense of panic, I know everybody's situation is going to be different. Can you give them some starting points to start to try to tackle that?
Yeah, I will. Please try to keep your job as long as you can, and just until this spate of inflation is over. And the older you are before you collect your Social Security or draw down your savings, you're going to be better off on the margin, but you'll be better off. So individually, if you can keep your job and keep saving, you'll be better. Every little bit helps. Really, don't be afraid to ask your boss for a raise. This is a time where profits are quite high. So get a little moxie. Get a little group together to screw your courage to the sticking post. Raises are happening. Be careful with your health, even though if you're depressed and ashamed, kind of doing bad health habits is a way to go. This is a time to kind of really, really secure that, because that will save you money. Don't do anything rash about day trading or even trying to downsize now. That can be expensive. So hold the course.
Teresa, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thank you. And if people want to follow up with me, you can give them my email.
All right, we'll have that available for people to call in. Teresa Ghilarducci is a nationally recognized expert on retirement security, professor of economics at the New School in New York.